So this workshop topic will be on steps 10, 11, and 12. And we will start with our first speaker, which is on step 10, and that is Hal P.
Thank you, Michelle. I'm Hal, recovering compulsive debtor. Thanks for letting me share tonight. My home group is in Greensboro, North Carolina. Thursday nights. We're actually closed at this time during the pandemic. So I got a couple of groups, one in New York and one in Raleigh, that have kind of adopted me until we start back up. I was asked to talk about step 10. When I speak, I'm trying to speak to the newcomer. And I feel for the newcomer when it comes to 10, 11, and 12. Because I remember as a newcomer, I certainly wasn't thinking down the road. I was thinking, how can I be helped right now? And that meant everything to me. But I want to give a word to the newcomer saying that the interesting thing for me was step 10, 11, and 12. Things had changed. The difference between now and when I first began DA is that now I have hope. I did not have hope before. My story is that if I felt bad, if I felt I was gonna be in debt forever till the end of time, and that I was never gonna get out of debt, and that I would never be able to catch up. And that's changed. The situations haven't changed, but my attitude towards them has changed. And I know that this too shall pass. And I use things like that to get through. My biggest problem was anxiety. What I love about the literature, the 12, 12, and 12, there's a lot of talk about self-centered fear. And that was me, self-centered fear. I believed that I was going to lose everything I had, which I came close to losing everything I had. And I believed that I was never going to get what I wanted. And so I can tell you this, my solvency date, the reason I use it as my solvency date, it was a date that I got into an argument with my sponsor, my DA sponsor. It was November 5th, 2008. On that day, he had asked me to tear up my credit cards, and I laughed at him. And I said, that's impossible. I have to have credit cards. I'm a traveling sales rep. And we fought about it on the phone. And the way we ended it, I think it was on a Tuesday or a Wednesday, maybe a Monday. I said, I'll tell you what, I'll give you to the end of the week. And I said, that's one day at a time. So I'll give you to the end of the week and I won't use them. That was November 5th, 2008. I had not used a credit card since that date. So that to me is one day at a time. I even kept my credit card in my wallet. It was probably expired for a year and a half before I finally just said, I don't know what I'm doing with this thing. But that was me. My anxiety would keep me up at night and say, you know, you better hold on to this because you're probably going to end up using it. And that was me pretty much in a nutshell. The other thing that I would do is I would pay my creditors before putting food on the table. And that's called deprivation in this program. And I would deprive not only myself, but my family too. The worst thing that I could have gotten was a call from maybe the gas company or the electric company saying, as if it would be a personal call, Hal, you owe us money. And that would be the worst thing that could happen. Meanwhile, you know, I go to the grocery store and only buy the minimum amount of food. But sure enough, the electric company will get paid. The cable company will get paid. The cell phone company will get paid. Because I didn't want to hear from them. And yet my family was complaining. And I said, hey, just suck it up. Let's get going. So I lived with that. And again, that caused me anxiety. For me, clarity is the remedy for anxiety. My disease said, Hal, you don't want to know your real situation. You don't want to know because it's going to hurt you. It's going to make you feel bad, and it's going to make you want to crawl in a little ball and fall asleep and never want to wake up.
5 minutes.
Thanks, Aaron. And so what I had to do in this program was become clear on my finances. My sponsor had asked me to start keeping numbers. Again, I fought with him. The sponsor went through hell with me, I guess. I fought with him. I said, that's not my problem. I don't go to 7-Elevens and buy big gulps and things like that. I wasn't wasting money. But yet I've always found myself in debt. But I wasn't wasting money. I wouldn't even buy clothes for myself. So my problem wasn't spending. And he said, keep your numbers. And so that's what I did. He also made me keep my numbers at the cash register for the first 90 days. He says, I don't care if you're at Harris Teeter, Safeway, whatever it is, right there at the counter. If you use your debit card and it's for $92.16, then you write down immediately $92.16 came from my debit card. That was part of my exercise. I didn't think that was going to do anything for me. And it did wonders. What it did is it made me become aware. And awareness is the biggest thing in this program. And that's where I continue to take personal inventory. Is being aware of what's going on around me. Before, I just wanted to shut it out. I didn't want to know. That was my disease telling me, don't want to know. Now, again, clarity is the remedy for anxiety. And now I want to know. And he asked me to do it for 90 days. I ended up doing it for probably, I think, a year and a half. Keeping my numbers. I had mentioned that really it's the same situations that continued. The difference was my attitude towards those situations. Hospital bills would all of a sudden pop up. I mean, that's part of life. That's an everyday thing. But before in the past, I would be like, oh, this is it. I might as well just turn over my money to everybody because I'm just done. And since this program and since working it, I now have hope. And I now know that this is just another thing and that I can work with people and I can tell them how much it's going to be and I can work it out. And sure enough, that came up. In fact, not too long ago, my wife came down with cancer and we have a huge deductible. In fact, the deductible wasn't anything. It was more of the out-of-pocket expense. We used that up in a heartbeat. And yet I knew through this program how to work with the hospitals, how to work with everybody, and knowing what I can do and what I cannot do. Where before, I would just, if somebody said, oh, well, just go pay on a credit card, that's what I would do. To me, whipping out that credit card was basically blocking my higher power out of a solution. And so now I let things develop. And that's the continuing to take personal inventory, is I don't have to react to every single thing immediately. Before, that's what I did. And now I don't have to. So for the newcomer,
1 minute.
Thank you, Aaron. Life slowed down for me and it allowed me to think, to stop, and to realize that there really are no wrong decisions. It's just a matter of how I look at them. And I haven't been perfect, but I do know my life is much simpler now. It's not easier, but it is much simpler now. And the biggest thing, and I'll say it for the third time, clarity is the remedy for anxiety. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Hal. Thanks for your share. And our next speaker is Jill M., and Jill will be speaking about step 11.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jill. I'm a compulsive debtor and spender, and I am from Orlando, Florida. I go to a fabulous group there on Monday nights. We are currently a Zoom meeting till at least January, so please join us. I'm happy to send you the information if you need it. Oh, Hal, you finished a little early. I wasn't ready for that sudden transition. So I'm so amazed to see so many participants here from all over the world. So welcome to all of you. It's just absolutely thrilling and an honor to be here. I have been a member of Debtors Anonymous for a couple of years now, although I went many, many years ago, much younger with much less debt, and thought I had it under control, and proved that I didn't. So I came back in a little more humble and a lot more in debt and willing to work through this program. I have, however, been in other 12-step programs for a very long time, and I know that the DA literature references using AA literature as inspiration. And so I was just going to read a couple of my favorite passages on the 11th step and then bring us into the DA literature and then just kind of talk about the 11th step a little bit. It says in the big book, it says step 11 suggests prayer and meditation. We shouldn't be shy on this matter of prayer. Better people than we are using it constantly. It works if we have the proper attitude and work at it. It would be easy to be vague about this matter. Yet we believe we can make some definite and valuable suggestions. And then it goes into the nightly inventory with the very specific questions about reviewing our day. And then on awakening, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. We consider our plans for the day. Before we begin, we ask God to direct our thinking, especially that it can be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, and self-seeking motives. And then it says over on the next page, if circumstances warrant, we ask our spouses or friends to join us. If we belong to a religious denomination, which requires a definite morning devotion, we attend to that also. If not members of religious bodies, we sometimes select and memorize a few set prayers, which emphasize the principles we have been discussing. There are many helpful books also. And then in the 12 and 12 of Alcoholics Anonymous, it says there is a direct linkage among self-examination, meditation, and prayer. Taken separately, these practices can bring much relief and benefit, but when they are logically related and interwoven, the result is an unshakable foundation for life. And finally, in the DA step book, it says at the bottom of page 54, cultivating conscious contact through prayer and meditation is a way of maturing in the DA recovery process. We grow in letting go of the illusion of control. We find ourselves able to tolerate and at times even embrace things that confounded us when we were debting, experiencing discomfort and uncertainty, having to wait, having to take a frightening, humiliating but necessary action. We come to know that our source has never been our job or business or our parents or spouse, but has always been our higher power. So I wanted to start with those readings so I was sure not to make this about me so much, but about what God has done for me through the working of the 12 steps of recovery, which I believe in wholeheartedly. Since it's affected, addiction has affected so many areas of my life. I've been at this quite a while. I'm hoping that DA is the last stop on the block, but who knows? And so for me, the 11th step has taken a lot of different iterations over the years. But I find that ultimately it's not really about the methods, you know, that I've tried, and I have tried many, but it's really more about the trying. It says that we seek through prayer and meditation, conscious contact with God, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out.
5 minutes.
Thank you. And so some of the methods that I have tried and continue to utilize is, like it said in the big book, the weaving of the 10th and 11th step together. So taking inventory so I can be responsible for my actions, which, once I came into recovery, I thought I would be, driven white as snow, that I would be perfect. I was very young when I came in the first time. And now I realize that I'm just a human being, trying to grow up and be responsible. So I have to continue to take inventory of my behavior and how it affects other people and be willing to make amends when necessary. So I try to do that on a daily basis. And then when situations arise, to do a deeper look and write out a formal 4-step and continue to do 5th steps with sponsors and also help others through the steps. One of the things that I've always done is to utilize contemplative prayer books. Those have been very helpful. I raised a son in recovery, and he used to call them my cereal books, which I think is really cute because they were always on the breakfast table. I mean, those just help center me in the morning and give me something to think about so that I don't go into my own thoughts, although I still do when I'm meditating. I have a prayer partner that I connect with every morning on the way to work. Again, I don't have to rely on my own self. And that's what I've really found to be the most significant part of growing up in 12-step recovery, is that, it says in the 3rd step that God provides us with care and protection. And it's taken me a long time to shift my conception of God from a God that wanted to prevent me from having things I wanted or punishing me for trying to get them, to one who actually cares for me and protects me. And one of the greatest ways that God does that for me is through other people and providing the support I need to be a better person, to live in this world in the most authentic and virtuous way that I can. So my prayer partner really helps me stay centered. I've made use of church, and since quarantine, that has taken the form of podcasts with my partner. Meetings, I think, can be a very spiritual place where I can see the hand of God, witnessing other people, their success, even their struggles, and observing with gratitude and recognition of God's miracles as I watch people come out of the despair of debt. I think about the story Bill W. shares in the big book about, he was a stockbroker, and in the crash of 29, how people were jumping out of windows. That's what money despair can do to people. It's terrifying. And I've had a lot of various addictions, and
1 minute.
And I can say that money despair is real. Thank you. And so seeing people grow in this program, doing PRGs with people, checking in with my numbers, creates such a gratitude for the blessings of God. And spiritual book studies, reading books. I do a lot of yoga and retreats, and I love how now we actually have apps on our phone that can help us meditate and be in a more mindful state. All of this, which creates God space for God to enter. You know, I now have a mortgage I can afford. I was able to help put my son through treatment. And I'm a teacher, so I don't have a lot of income. I certainly didn't have the extra money every month, but I had savings and I was willing to pull from it. And it turned out I only had to pull about $1,600 from it for his treatment. And that was a miracle of money just coming in, windfalls coming in to help alleviate some of that expense. I'm now going back to school, to graduate school, without debt. And thank you. And I'll just wrap up with this, that, you know, I finally feel like a grown-up who can show up as an equal partner in my relationship, not having to rely on any outside source, but rather on God for my financial blessings and balance. So thank you so much for inviting me.
Thank you, Jill. Our next speaker is Larry on step 12. So thank you, Larry, and take it away.
Thank you, Michelle. I'm Larry, a compulsive debtor. I'm in the Raleigh-Durham Chapel Hill meeting. It meets Wednesdays at 7. And it turns out this is the very meeting that Hal was talking about. We've taken him in. And it also turns out that our spiritual timekeeper, Aaron, comes to that meeting as well. I've been in DA since May of 2002. And my solvency date is September 29th, 2015. And I'm going to talk about step 12. I want to mention about steps 7 through 9 as they're presented here today. It's talking about reaching out. And what I, you know, if we think about reaching out, it's likely to be developing the capacity to reach out. What I want to talk about is in step 12 is practicing reaching out all the time. And I'm going to use the step 3 prayer to help with the difference between being inward oriented and outward oriented. So the part of the step 3 prayer says, remove my compulsive debting, my self-centered fear, and my own self-will. So this would be inside oriented. And as I'm talking about being outside oriented, I'm going to use two principles from my higher power. My higher power is an actual person who lived. And as I'm referring to these principles, I'm not trying to convince anyone to adopt my higher power. It's God as I understand him. And certainly DA is not endorsing this particular higher power. One of the principles has to do with the slogan on the tomb of my higher power. He died. And the slogan is mastery and servitude. Sometimes people get puzzled by this. Mastery implies power and supremacy. Servitude implies weakness and subservience. How can you be powerful and being not powerful? And the kind of service that I'm thinking of here, we can, you know, as in 12-step programs, we think of service as leading the meeting, being a sponsor, that kind of thing. And in some ways, that can be like, I'm going to be a Christian in church on Sunday, and the rest of the week, I'm going to be someone else. So what would it look like to be of service all the time? And one of the things is the idea that when we're of service, we're willing to inconvenience ourselves to benefit others. And an example of that would be my sharing right now. It turns out I'm an introvert, and I also have a lot of issues about whether my shares are good enough. So this is a real bit of torture here. But I'm doing this because I'm hoping that what I share will be of some value, some service to others. Another piece of this is that as I was thinking about what is my relationship to service, serving others, I noticed my wife playing the guitar. And normally she has a little footstool that she puts under one of her feet so that she can prop up her guitar and be more comfortable playing. And I noticed that she didn't have that and offered to go get it for her. This is not DA related service, but it is a form of service that we, you know, I can practice all the time. The other thing that I want to, second principle that I want to bring up has to do with wants and desires. And in the view of heaven, in Christianity and Islam, heaven is a place where all of your wants and desires are completely satisfied.
5 minutes.
Thank you, Aaron. Whereas in the tradition that I'm following, the ultimate end game for spiritual development is having no wants and desires. And that's an unusual point of view for most of us. And you know, I mentioned this to somebody else and they thought I meant that, oh, God is so bountiful and giving that we have no need to have anything that further that we would want or desire. That's not the idea. The idea here is that the end game is that we are actually devoid of wants and desires. And how would you go about that? Well, one of the things you can do is use step 7, ask God not to, you know, this is an enormously long range project, but not to remove all your wants and desires, but to reduce your attachment. So let's see, I just blanked out for a second. So we could imagine that if you have a load, you know, a large supply of wants and desires that you're dealing with, then you're going to have a lot of disappointment, a lot of frustration, and a lot of inward looking. What is the state of how you're doing with your wants and desires? Whereas if you have a smaller package of those, then that allows you to be a bit more outward oriented. And the interesting thing here is that if I've discovered that if I come to people without any particular thing that I'm trying to get from them or accomplish with them, or get from them mainly, then people notice that. And if I'm coming to people with some kind of ulterior agenda and something that I want, even if I'm not aware of it, people notice that. So that I'm able to interact with people in a way that's cleaner in some ways. It is a way of modeling this reduced sense of wanting, grasping, needing, what can I get from you? So those are the two principles that I find helpful. They're difficult. It's it's not always easy to be of service, and it's not always easy to find some kind of, at least a little detachment from that big bag of wants and desires that I haul around with me all the time. But it gives a way of, I guess what it allows is serenity. The other thing is, how do we carry this message to compulsive debtors? Thanks, Aaron. That's also part of step 12. And we, you know, within DA, in my experience, there's not a lot of outreach to other people. But the compulsive debtors that I do come in contact with are people in the meeting. And if I can model quieter, more service-oriented place, then this is a way of helping to carry that those particular principles to others. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, and thanks to everybody for your service. Thank you to the speakers, and thank you to Aaron for keeping time.